and welcome to the Horse Sense podcast show, a show for the thinking horse person. I'm Amanda Edwards, director and founder of the Equine Care Clinic and host of the show. We aim to give you practical, up-to-date, relevant and even inspirational information to help you get your best out of your horse. I'm here today with Lee De Clifford from Matamata, is that how I say it?
Yes, Matamata.
Matamata, veterinary practice. In New Zealand, we're at Equitana, and welcome to the show, Lee.
Thanks for having me.
That's okay. So, you're here talking about a whole range of, you've got quite a few talks, haven't you?
Yes, yeah, covering a good broad basis, covering management of the equine athlete, management of the wound.
Yep.
Performance nutrition and gastric ulceration management, and also flexural and angular limb deformities and falls.
Yeah, that's a pretty wide range. And really good talks too. Last night I had the opportunity to listen to Lee, and it was very interesting. I've picked up quite a few little hints and tips as well, so that's really good. So tell us a bit about you.
Well, I'm originally from Horsham, up in northwestern Victoria, and I actually went to Massey University over in New Zealand, and the reason for that is that in the final part of the veterinary degree, you can actually major in a species, of which was horses for me, and well, that was the first course in the world where you could do that, so that was quite appealing.
Yeah.
So
it's got a brilliant reputation too, Massey.
Yeah, it does. It's very good.
It's a really good program, so that's really fantastic. And you're not very old. How old are you?
Oh, I'm only 32.
Yeah, so, like, I'm old. So, so you've been doing this a little while, and then you've done some other things you practiced. You said you were practiced at Ballarat. And
yes, I worked for a couple of years at Ballarat Vet Practice.
Yeah.
And the equine hospital out there.
Yeah.
And then spent 4 years over in England as well.
Oh, fantastic.
And had a small stint in the States for a season, and then married a Kiwi, and now I'm in New Zealand.
Did you meet her at Massey?
Yes.
Ah, yeah, okay. And she rides horses. Do you ride?
Yes, I do ride. I don't have much time anymore.
Yeah.
It's spent mostly looking after everyone else's horses and end up grooming on the weekends.
All the fun stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a bit of a bugger.
Here's a note from our sponsors. Us. This podcast is made possible thanks to the support of Equine eCare, and so we'd like to tell you a little bit about this exciting new organisation. It's actually a branch of the Equine Care Clinic, and it's grown as a solution for our clients and their horses and the problems that they've faced. Wounds, injuries and trauma are at the top of the pops for death and unsoundness in domestic horses. If you own a horse, there's a pretty good chance this will happen to you at some point along the way. You'll be expected to clean, dress and bandage and give medications too. At Equine eCare, we know this can be pretty stressful and very confusing with all the conflicting information out there. Will you know what to do and when you should do it? Over the years, I've helped many horses and their owners heal massive and devastating wounds in practical, easy to apply and evidence-based ways. What I realised was that they needed information they could keep coming back to use again and again when they needed it. So, our new programs at Equine eCare just kind of meet this need. A series of videos, tip sheets and other resources to guide you through the usual problems horse owners face. They're not too long or too short and you get to keep them forever. The first bandaging series consists of 5 lessons covering how to clean and dress a wound, how to bandage correctly, gives you practical hints and tips to prevent problems and shows you how to keep things in place even in the tricky spots. These are practices we've been using in our equine care clinic for years with success. The second series includes 6 lessons on how to give medications, including how to give intramuscular injection, and we cover hints and tips for easy practice, side effects to look out for, and practical management techniques to overcome common problems. We have a third series that is on vital signs, knowing what's normal, how to measure, how to monitor, what it all means. So you want more than faceless strangers in the vertical world, and unlike many other learning programs, you aren't left on your own and you can interact and ask questions anytime. We want you to experience a personalised online service. So you get great value as well as great content, because we want you to have the information and do the right thing. So get on there and have a, you know, beginners, experts, you're all going to find things in these programs that are useful. So get on the Equine eCare website and have a look and check it out. Back to the podcast. Okay, so, well, I'm really, you know, my passion's wounds. So when I saw someone else talking about wounds, I was like, yes, it's finally getting out there. So we had a bit of a chat, a bit about different things. And what would you say are the key management principles for equine wounds? For
the first is prompt treatment.
Yeah.
Don't sit and see which way it goes. The second step would be you don't have to do too much, because doing too much can actually aggravate wounds and make them worse.
Mm-hmm.
The third, I would say, is cleanliness. Immobilization would be the fourth one. So, and be patient. These things will take time. The more time you give it, the better result you're going to have, with a better quality heal at the end. And I suppose the final point would be you be careful what you put on wounds, because some things do not much, some things do a good job, but there are a lot of things that can do be quite detrimental to the wound healing process, and you just have to be careful what you choose.
Very careful. So let's unpack that a bit. So your first point was be prompt. Let's talk a bit about, I know that, and when we think about it, horses injure themselves a lot, don't they?
Yes, if you look at the survey results from most Western countries around the world, wound management or wound call outs for vets is either the second or third most common call out.
And they're pretty big.
Yeah, a majority of them are quite significant.
Yeah. And I find that it doesn't seem to matter what sort of fencing people have got. I mean, it can be worse if they've barbed wire and all those sorts of things, but they can still manage to injure themselves on nothing, it seems.
Yeah, they do manage to find a way.
Yeah, so and being a flight animal, they do that a lot. So, and a lot of horses do end up being, you know, unsound or no good anymore, or die as a result of injury. So it's important to get this right. So when the thing that I would say to people is the sanity check. You know, if you would go to the doctor for it, then you probably need a vet. So when you say prompt, what should people do when they come out, their horses, they've detangled them, they've got them out. What's their first thing that they should be doing?
The first thing that I like to do is, I'd actually say take a quick photo.
Yeah.
On your phone now. Because the next step is to immobilise the limb.
Yep.
And if it's contaminated with fecal material, dirt, mud, etc., actually the first thing would be to, you know, hose the wound. And you can certainly use standard potable tap water from the hose under a decent pressure to remove as much dirt as possible. Now the water pressure that you obtain from the hose should not be too powerful. And you should be fine just by having a hose on a standard a spray, like a light shower type.
So we don't want to hose it till it's grey and wash away all the things that are coming to the site to actually bring it. So, but you're just talking about getting rid of
debris.
Obvious debris.
And one of the things why we don't want to put too much pressure on wounds is that that will actually drive bacteria and dirt into the wound. But again, if you just have your hose, if you have a nozzle on the hose and use it as a light, not a jet, but just one step back as a bit of a shower, that will be sufficient pressure to remove debris but not drive that further into the wound. So, and once you do that, I would say take a photo and then put your phone away. And then, because what we'll do is later on, what I like to do is that get my clients to take a photo, send that through immediately so then I can say I'll be there in 20 minutes or I'll be there after my next couple of calls. So I know which way we need to manage that. After we've clean the wound up, it's immobilisation. And the best thing they often do is just to get a wrap on to some degree and keep that wound clean, keep it out of the way.
Good. Okay. So, and then the next thing you said was, what was your second point again? Was prompt treatment. So, because I always sort of say, well, like, they can't sedate the horse. The horse is obviously a bit, you know, upset because he's hurt. So you're going to come out, sedate him, and give that wound a really good clean out and make sure all of the stuff. And also, what else are you looking for when you're looking at those wounds? Because mostly they're on legs.
Yes. I mean,
sometimes they're gait injuries and big stake things. And so what are you going to do next?
Assess the communication of the wound with the vital structures.
Yep.
In particular, joints and tendon sheaths.
Yep.
And then second to that, soft tissue structures such as tendons and ligaments. And make an assessment from that as to which next step is appropriate. You know, do you need to tap a joint to assess communication with a wound or a tendon sheath? Also bone, how heavily involved the bone is. Whether or not you need to debride that bone and remove the injured bone from there, because if that dies off slowly over a couple of weeks and the wound's healing over the top, you'll see the formation of sequestrum, which will impair wound healing. And
so it acts like a foreign body, doesn't it? Yeah. And it starts to just then burst the wound open again and won't heal.
Yeah, and it won't be immediately present on x-rays either at that time.
Yeah, which is, you know, x-rays are good, but as you say, those things will calcify and become much more obvious later on, so sometimes you need to do them further down the track again as well, don't you?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, okay, so that's really cool. So you've come out. What do you think about stitching? Suturing, because it's a bit of a, you know, do I try and put that back together? What's the purpose? Because a lot of horse owners sort of think, oh, my vet didn't do a really good job because he stitched up that wound, but it all came apart. But really the goals are a little bit different than in our human world, aren't they?
Because correct. And also the tension of the skin, especially of the distal limbs, is exceptionally high.
Yeah.
And it is difficult for sutures to stay in place in those locations. So that's where we often, and now, we're using casts a lot more.
Yeah.
And splints.
I find that's really...
Yeah, because that really does reduce the mobilisation of the entire area where possible. If you don't want to do that, or it's not appropriate to do that, then suturing the wound, in an ideal sense, we'd like to get a primary closure to get those severed skin edges back together to try and heal them up. Now, you never get an entire wound on a distal limb to suture up nicely and stay together, and that again is because of the retraction of that skin, because the skin is tight and it's designed to be so around that lower limb, so it's naturally going to peel back. And there are certain suture patterns and techniques that you can use to reduce that tension that's placed on the wound, but quite often the body finds a way. And so what I like how I approach it is that we're using the flap that you suture back up to act as a biological bandage.
Yeah.
And if we can get a week, 10 days of that retaining moisture over that site underneath that, well, then that's actually a bonus.
Yeah, well, it speeds the whole process up. So that's the other thing that you as the audience need to think about, or you as the listeners need to think about, is that it's going to speed up that process.
Improve the quality of the heel as well.
Yeah.
And for every square centimetre of skin that we don't have to grow, you can speed up the rate of healing significantly and reduce the amount of pain the horse is going through, the chance of infection. And you're also going to have your horse up and running in a quicker time frame as well, and with a better quality heel.
Perfect. So it's a really good thing to try and do, and the horse owner should understand that it might not hold together, but every day that we keep it in place is helpful.
Yeah. It is certainly benefiting the wound.
Cool. All right. Then we're going to look at you talked a lot about, a bit about keeping it clean. Ongoing management. So the ongoing management, how would you approach that, or what information would you give your horse owners around that?
It's quite simple, really. Keeping it clean will increase the rate of healing, reduce complication rates, and as a side effect of keeping them clean by wrapped up, you're actually increasing the moisture content of that wound, which also speeds up healing rates. So it actually has a double effect, but then also by bandaging the wound, which one, keeps it clean, two, provides moisture, it will increase the immobilisation of that wound area, which again will increase wound healing rates.
And a lot of people will say, "I'll just leave it open to air."
No.
Why don't we do that?
Oh, wounds heal better when they're moist. Yeah. That's a simple fact.
Yeah.
The body needs water to function, and it actually needs more water to function in a repair state, in an area that is damaged. So you don't actually need to expose them to air as soon as what we think. And in actual fact, I tend to bandage for longer because I find it gives a better quality heal.
And less scarring at the end, don't you find? Yeah.
Yep. And less chance if that area is damaged, or if the area suffers trauma, is less likely to be damaged to a significant degree as what it did previously.
Yeah.
Because the scar tissue is in a lot more functional state.
Yeah. So, because it takes quite a while for that skin to become... It will never go back to its original
state. It will never obtain it, but the best it'll get can take up to 2 years from initial healing, initial injury.
It's kind of important to, you know, protect that area afterwards too, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All right, so the topical treatments. Now, we see a lot on Facebook. I don't know, I love to look at the different things that people like to put on their wounds. What do you recommend and what do you not recommend? Or is that too big a question?
No, I've seen some doozies over the time. I don't recommend lime.
No.
No copper sulfate. There's all sorts of...
I find that, you know, when you get out to the people that have had copper sulfate, they're the ones that come in the clinic because they're now kicking their heads in. They're like, I can't get this copper sulfate on my horse anymore.
Yeah, correct.
It hurts like heck. If you get it on your fingers, you know, after, if you're trimming and stuff, so sometimes you will use it on CD tail things, and it'd be like, it hurts, it stings.
Yeah, and it kind of comes down to the principle of, if you wouldn't put it on yourself, you shouldn't put it on the horse.
Yeah.
And hydrogen peroxide, as great as it looks when it fizzes up and you feel like you're doing something, it's actually been shown that it doesn't actually improve healing rates, doesn't actually kill bacteria to a significant degree.
I know.
And it actually is cytotoxic to all the normal cells that are present within the wound bed.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a no-no. So there are plenty of products out there, but, and as you know, and as I'm sure the audience knows it, just because there was one study done on one ingredient in that cream doesn't mean the whole cream is actually beneficial.
Yeah.
And you've got to be very careful, because most wound creams are actually predominantly petroleum jelly or some sort of filler, and that's going to increase the wound retention rates. I mean, so that the water retention rates in wounds, which, as we discussed previously, is going to help healing to a degree. Yeah. So you've actually just paid for paraffin oil.
Yep.
But that's not saying paraffin oil should technically be used either, because it actually smothers the wound and reduces oxygen delivery.
Yeah.
To the wound. So there's several products out there that could be used, but I suppose the most prevalent one at the moment that's been discussed in the horse world is really the use of natural products.
Yeah.
And I mean, the most tested natural product out there would probably have to be the Manuka honey.
Yeah. I use that a lot, and but not all manuka is equal, is it? Not all honeys are equal.
No, it's quite interesting actually that also not all products containing honey are equal.
Yeah.
So one of the biggest issues that is facing the industry at the moment is that you've got products that contain a small amount of honey. Now, that Manuka honey that is present within those products, when it started out, was originally quite a good quality product at an appropriate level, but through the dilution process of being added with other ingredients, the overall what we call UMF factor of the honey, or which is actually a rating of the methyl glyoxal component in honey, is actually below therapeutic levels by the end. So
what is a therapeutic level? So those ratings are a bit tricky too, because...
Yeah, so the UMF came about when people didn't know what was in Manuka honey that caused such beneficial effect.
Yeah.
And that's where it came out, unique Manuka factor. When they discovered that it was actually the methyl glyoxal, the UMF is really... it's not important anymore, because what we know is that it's the methyl glyoxal, and the rating in that now is just called MG.
Yeah.
Or MGO, depending on what company is producing it. So The studies to date have shown that a 15 UMF or an equivalent of 500 methylglyoxal level is adequately sufficient for severely contaminated infected wounds. Yeah. And it acts in both an antibacterial and antifungal capacity. But in saying that, it also has an inflammatory modulating effects. Yeah. So it has been fairly conclusively shown now that it increases pro-inflammatory cytokines that speed up the rate of healing in the wound, but it also decreases some as well, which are the ones that are predominantly causing pain.
Yeah.
So it's a dual-acting inflammatory modulating product.
We use it a lot in diabetic ulcers in humans.
Yep.
So for the same reason, because that becomes a chronic wound.
Yep.
And that's what we're trying to avoid, really, in the horse wounds, isn't it? Trying to stop that wound becoming a chronic wound.
Yep.
Keeping it acute. So a lovely product all around, really. If you had just a normal sort of, what would be adequate? We were talking yesterday about, you know, sort of the 13 mark equivalent.
Yep.
Would be adequate for...
Yeah, for minor wounds, cuts, scrapes and abrasions, a bit of mud fever, a bit of pus and dermatitis as well, works exceptionally well for that. But you need at least the methylglyoxal level of 350, which is equivalent to around about 13.
Yeah.
And you need that for those minor wounds, but for your severe degloving injuries or wounds that go full skin thickness, that are down into soft tissue beneath, you really should have the 500 level there as well.
Yeah.
And I suppose the other important thing is that you cannot have anything lower than that. And they have just recently released a study out of University of Sydney, and they've shown that the normal clover honey and lower level Mānuka honey below the 10 UMF rating has no beneficial effects over and above doing nothing on wound management. So,
and same with the, I think raw honey was not, was no good either. Mm. And the honey's on the shelves in the supermarket.
Yeah.
What's happened to them?
So the problem with those is that most of them have been heated throughout the treatment process, and it actually destroys the enzymes within those that are what originally caused some sort of beneficial effects for wound management. So they're essentially useless in that point. So then you may say, well, let's go get some raw, unprocessed honey. Well, the problem with that is that it contains bee parts, pollen, bark, dirt. There are some fungal spores in there that can survive, and the main one is actually botulinum spores. So
you don't want that in your wound.
No, because we know that horses can suffer from that.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's very important to make sure the products you're buying are filtered and also sterilised via radiation. And it's been shown that irradiation won't decrease the ability for that Mānuka honey to perform.
It's fantastic. So I think if you just stuck with that advice alone, that would get you through most things, I think. It's really... we do overdo it. Now, how long would you leave a dressing in place on a large wound?
Yeah, it does depend. Initially, I'd be changing the bandage every day.
Mm-hmm.
And we adjust the bandage change frequency based on the amount of exudate coming from that wound, and also how frequently we need to apply creams onto that to achieve the beneficial effect. So I would principally change daily up until I feel that the exudate was decreasing, and then I would step it out to 2 days, then 3 days, then 4 days, and 5 days, because you still have to... It's finding that balance between economics and practicality and achieving a goal of a decent wound healing at the end of it. So it is very dependent, and obviously the bigger, more severe the wound is, the more frequent those bandage changes will be initially.
And that can be a management problem as well, because if you haven't got... so the bandaging itself, I find, is a bit of an art form, because you don't want to get your horse so stressed out about the whole bandage change thing that they then no longer let you do it, and then you can't keep the dressings on. So it's kind of that using things that don't upset the horse. So Mānuka is really good because it actually takes away some of the pain issues as well. So keeping it all nice and easy for yourself and your horse, and keeping their pain levels under control. Again, sanity check. If you're going to have a big dressing change, do we need to give something before we do that to help them?
Yeah, definitely. There are the sedative pastes
yep.
you can purchase through your vet, and they are a great way to, especially with young horses as well,
yeah.
Just make the experience more comfortable for them, because yeah. it'll make it more comfortable for you in the long run.
Exactly, well. And you don't want a horse that you can't touch its leg down the track and it's all, you know, freaked out every time a vet turns up. I had one horse that, if my vet turned up in his green overalls, he would be like,
yeah.
So you don't sort of want those kinds of memories, and it's because he had this, you know, I think he'd had a previous degloving nasty injury, so
yep.
clearly that person wore green overalls.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's also why it's important not to put anything too caustic on yeah. the, on the wound, because you will get hypersensitivity and what we call wind up in nerves, which means that the nerve endings will become exceptionally sensitive, more so than they used to be, and you actually find that some of the nerve endings grow to have a larger area of contact with that area, that sensitive tissue, and that can take years to decrease. And so it's all about managing it initially to maximise the outcome later on.
Yeah, and the so that kind of, a lot of these products they're using to prevent proud flesh. Everyone seems to get obsessed about proud flesh or hypergranulation tissue.
Yep.
So
yeah, one of the main causes for, well, so the main causes for production of excessive granulation tissue is movement, and unfortunately lower limbs on horses yep. having that tight skin opens them up and allows them to move around, which
and
is
in
why
those joint areas
yeah
too,
joint areas yeah. are yeah they're quite troublesome, and that's why mobilisation is key.
Yeah.
Now horses unfortunately do have a higher rate of granulation tissue formation that leads to excessive production over that and above of what less domesticated species have. And it's quite significant, the results between a pony, and if you take a Mongolian horse and a pony, yeah. they're very similar, but then you get a domesticated thoroughbred in particular, they will have a lower healing rates but also higher production of granulation tissue. So, and again, one of the great natural products that's been shown to reduce that proud flesh formation is actually the manuka honey as well. And then also in saying that, once you, if you do get to a point where it's really quite pronounced and quite difficult to treat, the best way is actually to excise it.
Yep. So just trim it back. Yep. Not unskilled people. So the vet needs to come out and do that.
Yep.
Unless you've got proper debriding skills. But
and it can get quite messy too.
Yes. It's very vascular, isn't it?
A large amount of blood flow.
So a lot of blood flow, not many nerves. So it doesn't seem to hurt them at all.
No, not at all. Not at that stage, no. And then I quite like to follow that up with the application of a steroid cream.
Yeah,
because okay. that will help.
So something like prednisone or...
Yep, yeah, exactly. Yep, yeah. That works quite well. And what I'll often do is just excise the proud flesh, wrap the leg up, and then come out the next day, because it's going to bleed for quite a while underneath. Yeah. So any creams you apply onto
it's
that...
It's just going to wash
it's
off.
It's a complete waste of time. Yeah. So come out the next day, then apply the cortisone cream for a couple of days, get everything yeah. settled back down, stop the cortisone cream, move back to another more sensible product that's not good. Because yep. the problem with the cortisone cream is that it will reduce wound healing over time. That's why we're using it
yep.
on the proud flesh. But it's quite interesting. Horses have a lower acute inflammatory response to wounding.
Yeah.
And that's one of the main reasons why they get proud flesh formation as well, because you get a low-grade chronic inflammatory response,
yeah.
where ponies and less domesticated breeds will have a higher acute inflammatory response, and that will subside. And that's where the manuka honey comes in, because you actually are promoting that inflammation whilst reducing pain, and that will reduce your rates of proud flesh formation, which has been shown again by some really good studies out of Australia.
So that's an interesting point too, because a lot of times people are hosing for a long time at the beginning to decrease, they think they're doing it to decrease the inflammatory response, but actually we want an acute inflammatory response. And there's also the studies that have shown that if that is stopped through ice or whatever, the healing process is prolonged down the end. So that's quite interesting. A lot of people don't realise that in those first days you actually do want that response. It's you don't want it down the track.
So. Yeah, yeah. And the other thing is that people maybe go a little bit step too far and say, oh, I won't give my horse any non-steroidals such
yeah.
as Bute. You can still give them
yes,
at a standard dose
a very
rate
good point, yeah.
without affecting the wound healing rates, because you'll run into a myriad of other problems if you don't have that horse comfortable.
Yeah.
I've seen horses get severe colic and dehydration because they're in so much pain that they can't. They've had some Bute or some meloxicam in particular that would actually circumnavigate those issues.
Yeah.
So, but it's that balance. You know, so you make sure that they're comfortable, but you do try to taper off that the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories in an appropriate time frame.
So that's a really, and coming back to your prednisone, I like that you said, you know, a couple of days, because I know people that put that on for, you know, they're like, the green stuff fixed my horse, so
yeah.
I'll just put it on every wound that I've ever had. So I'm pleased that you brought that up. And
it needs to be targeted application.
Yeah, exactly. So you're actually addressing the stages, the products to what's happening with that wound and individualising the care. And I think that's a really important point to take home. Just when we're talking about Manuka, so people then go into the whole natural products thing. Colloidal silver. It seems to be a bit of a favourite out there.
It is the in thing at the moment.
It's very expensive too.
It is, and to date the studies aren't there to support its use.
Yeah.
I'm not saying there has to be an exceptionally high quality study just to show something works every time, but when there's a lack of studies to show any beneficial effect or any trends of significance at all, it's a bit hard to recommend its use.
Probably, you know, if they want to feed it to the horse, go for it. But
but
it's probably not going to do much for the wound, is it?
Well, no.
It's
exceptionally hard. Your best form of management of wounds is topical application, essentially.
Yeah. That'll dressings. Okay. So, how fast will it heal? Because you talked about being patient.
Yep.
So let's say we've got a degloving injury on the back leg. You could see bone when you got there. Mm-hmm. How long, but there's no tendon involvement. So it's just essentially you're going to dress and clean, couldn't stitch it. How long do you think? And it goes right down the, as they always do, down the front of that leg.
4 to 6 months.
Yeah.
Realistically for those. And every now and again you have to be prepared for a little setback as well.
Because it's a long time to keep a wound clean and dry and...
And keep the horse sane for that time frame of being confined. And so you have to allow 4 to 6 months.
So I think that's another sort of key thing is have that patience, don't lose heart. Because I find people get to, you know, a couple of months in and go, I just can't do this anymore and it's I'm doing it wrong and it's not getting better. But it is going to take that length of time.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the financial burns as well. Yeah. They're not cheap to get a wound of that significance back to full health.
Yeah.
But you do just have to be in there for the long haul. Yeah. It will get there eventually.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you would have too. We've seen some amazing wounds heal over time. I saw one that had literally just the bone and it's come back in a funny sort of shape of the leg, I must say, but...
Yeah, but it's functional.
Yeah, it works. Yeah. Horse is rideable, all that sort of stuff, and sort of go, oh, there you go. So you can do it if you persist.
Yeah, definitely.
I like to leave our listeners with a key message. So what would your key message around wound care in horses be? Well, you can have two if you want.
How about two sentences?
Two sentences is fine.
Yeah. So, clean... Bandaged, immobilised.
Perfect.
And time.
Time, patience,
I
think that's been a great conversation, Lee. So I really want to thank you for coming on the show. I reckon listeners are going to get heaps out of that. And I wish you well with all of your endeavours.
Yep, thank you. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Okay, thank you.